Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, welcome to episode number 11 of our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. We're in season number 2, aren't we, Quinn?
Wow, season 2.
Season 2 premiere coming at ya.
We didn't have a new opening.
We didn't have we're not getting rid of this opening by bensounds.com.
It's not like Roseanne with the, gets a little more elaborate every season.
Folks, we're here as usual to talk to you about wrestling, retro wrestling, things we remember, and some things we wish we didn't. Quinn, we have over 40 years.
Plus 11.
Plus 11 of combined fandom. And today, on this beautiful Monday, December 19th, we're going to talk to you about some of those things. Quinn, I understand they can subscribe a few places. Why don't you tell the folks where that might be?
Well, there's a plethora of places now.
Ooh, a plethora.
Yeah, we got the iTunes. You can always go over to iTunes on your iTunes, you know, web
on thing. Your iTunes.
Yeah, on your iTunes.
Right.
You can go subscribe there. You can subscribe over at Google Play.
Google Play Music,
Google
or whatever
Play
it's called.
Music, yeah. Whatever they like to be called nowadays. There's the Stitcher.
The Stitcher.
Yeah.
Very good.
A lot of people like that, I hear.
Very good web app.
And now we're on this new podcast directory, Blueberry.
Blueberry.
B-L-U-B-R-R-Y.
.com.
Yeah. Now, that's just another directory. I'm sure it'll just show up in your podcatcher if you search for us.
That's right, yeah.
It's more of a directory kind of thing.
And I also understand we have a website.
Yes, we do. It's called ovppodcast.com.
The .com. And of course, at any time, go to our Twitter, at ovppodcast. You can tweet at us, you can follow us, you can ask us stuff, you can disagree with us, whatever. You can also email us, and you can do that at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. By the way, if you're listening on iTunes, leave us a review.
Yeah,
we'd appreciate
that. We like
that. Even if it's not a 5-star review. How about that?
Yeah. Minus 5-star review.
We'll take a -5-star review, Brian Alvarez,
yeah.
Okay?
We just like stars.
The reviews. And you know, if you want to write a review, you can write a review, or you can just give us the stars only.
Give us the stars. The snowflakes?
Yeah, the snowflakes. I don't think there's snowflakes over at iTunes.feet over there, but...
iTunes.friends.
Yeah.
Folks, we have a new format, as promised, this week. This is our Season 2 format, Quinn.
It's very exciting.
So... there's no more missed opportunity. No, no, no.
What are we going
to
do?
To start it off, our first segment is called One Thing That I Miss. And that's each week, Quinn and I will alternate speaking about something we miss from wrestling past.
I'm excited about this.
I'm excited about this, too. So to open this segment, I'm going to start.
You're going to do the honors.
I'm going to do the honors. One thing I miss, Quinn.
Okay.
Is there not being a GM of Raw or SmackDown?
The new General Manager!
SmackDown Live General Manager!
Well, you missed their, like, just not having one, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying no authority figure whatsoever, because there was Jack Tunney all throughout the mid-80s
right.
into the mid-90s, then
more,
Gorilla.
You more want a silent authority.
I would be so much happier if it was like an occasional appearance, someone that came out to settle things.
I agree. Make
a big match, the way Jack Tunney did. Now, Jack Tunney, folks, was the most notable, I'd say, WWF president.
He was like pretty much for the majority of there being a president.
Yeah.
Like he was there.
He was president from like, I think, 84 until...
Yeah, when they bought Maple Leaf, basically.
Yep. Exactly. Good point.
Yeah.
Until 95.
Right.
And he wouldn't be there every single week making the matches on Superstars.
He was basically only there when they had to rule on something.
Exactly.
Like if there was a controversial thing.
All reptiles are barred from ringside.
But, he would be mentioned like somehow like... even though he wasn't there in real life, they would talk like, oh,
he's watching backstage,
or
he's going to have to check this out.
Or he's watching the replays
right.
and the videos and all this.
And the implication, I don't know if it was really explicitly stated, but the implication was that these matches were put together ahead of time. They were put together according to how well the wrestlers were doing.
There was
rankings. There was contenders.
There was that. And then they would also talk about how the managers would sign contracts
Correct.
For contests.
Yep.
And that even the most piddly, like, jobber match was somehow signed at some point.
Right. Like, and if nothing else, there was the purse money.
Purse money!
As Gorilla used to like to say.
There was money involved, yeah.
There were stakes. Now, and it was a gradual transformation. Actually, let me just follow through with that gradual transformation.
Go ahead.
So Tunney started to appear less and less as the mid-90s rolled on. In fact, his last real notable thing was probably the Royal Rumble 94 decision.
But I would say almost right before that, I felt like he appeared more than he ever had in like 92.
He was pretty prominent in 91, 92, and in 88.
Because there was a lot of controversy, if you recall.
Right, and the whole thing with him is he was the authority.
Right.
Vince was not acknowledged as the owner.
No. Vince was just an announcer as far as the, you know, the common fan even knew. I mean, I know in the press Vince got some stuff, but, you know, the kids watching Saturday morning didn't know Vince McMahon, who was
the commentator,
owned
their
company.
Their parents might have.
Their parents might have, right.
Because he was in the news sometimes.
And nobody really mentioned it. It wasn't like it was important that Vince McMahon owned it.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It was really inconsequential.
Yeah.
So basically, Tunney would only really appear when something really mattered. Rarely got involved in storylines. Occasionally, Bad News Brown got physical with him once.
Yeah, I know he presided over the wrestling classic tournament.
He was
there or something.
He appeared at...
Because they were giving the car away. The Rolls-Royce Phantom.
Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud 3.
Yeah, that... What a weird show that is.
Yeah, that is weird. And that weird, like, not model. Like
that 80s hot, but not really.
But it's clearly someone in their office that's like a secretary.
Yeah, some intern.
Yeah.
So basically... then Tunney, in real life, WWF, I guess, stopped working with the Tunneys to promote Canada, so they got rid of him as a figurehead president.
I always got the impression that Tunney was retiring or something, too.
Yeah, but from everything I understand is Vince took over promoting Canada, Toronto, you know, himself, and didn't need Tunney anymore.
What was Tunney even doing?
He was still, the whole time, he was still Canada's promoter.
What does that mean, Canada's
promoting the shows?
You mean just like
the physical promoting the of the
physical
shows,
act of
all
handing
of the
out
resource,
flyers
yeah,
and
he,
stuff
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, sure. When he went around door to door handing out flyers, like Chinese menus.
No, like booking like television ads and
correct,
stuff like
yes,
that.
All the promotion that would go into a show.
Okay.
He handled Toronto and other parts of Canada. In 95, Vince decided to do it himself. Didn't need Tunney anymore, so he was no longer the president.
Why do you think that? I mean, he must have somebody that he hires to run Canada now.
Probably
even.
Cheaper for him to do it himself in 95.
Well, in-house, you mean? Because it's
yeah,
not like
in-house.
Vince himself is talking to the TV man in Canada. But
instead of subbing out Jack Tunney to do it and paying him to do it, he would rather just use his own in-house resources.
Right.
So they give the presidency then to Gorilla Monsoon.
Which I thought was a great pick.
I thought it was great. And he was more prominent. I'll give them this. He was more prominent than Tunney.
Well, if I recall, didn't he, when he came in, he said he would be a more hands-on president or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, voice of the fans type of thing. He would make announcements. He came out. He did stuff. He started to noticeably, like, kind of not be as involved in mid-97.
Well, that was because he got sick.
Correct.
And also, I always felt like, I know it wasn't the end of it, but I always felt when Vader bombed him, that was kind of like the end of Gorilla for the most part.
Well, that was January 96. He came back a few months later, at WrestleMania 12, actually. But he was actually officially the president until he died. They just never really mentioned it.
I know, and if I recall, they I like this. We could do a whole podcast on the hierarchy history of
the
WWE.
Hierarchy.
But if I recall, the commissioner was a sub, basically.
It was.
For
the presidency.
For the presidency.
The presidency was never vacated.
Yeah.
Monsoon always held the presidency until he died.
Slaughter came in as the commissioner,
right.
But he was kind of running day-to-day operations. Kind of like, it's almost like the modern equivalent, like how now they have the GM and they actually have the commissioner.
Yes.
Like, that's what it is now.
But the thing to remember, folks, if you're a newer wrestling fan that maybe started watching after the Vince, you know, after the Attitude Era, this sounds pretty obvious. Yeah, of course, you have an authority figure that makes matches. Slaughter was the next one. You know, August 97, he becomes the commissioner. He was really more involved than Gorilla had
but
been.
Even his more involvement is nowhere close to, like, basically, it's not like how it is now where the authority figure would come out and tell you all the matches at the beginning like it is now.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how this works.
No.
It's more like, it's just assumed that guy did all that, and that they mentioned, oh, this match was signed, they got approval or
correct.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was done, and, you know, they just start wrestling at the beginning.
Exactly. Like, there were just matches.
Right.
That's what, like, what they were there to do is wrestle. Right. So
you didn't have a 20-minute segment to explain why each match was signed that night. It was like, no, well,
they
this
were
is
much
a wrestling show,
yeah,
so there's matches.
There's going to be wrestling matches, yeah. Exactly.
Like, you don't need to explain it.
And Slaughter was the first one, really, and there were hints of it with Gorilla Monsoon. Towards the end of his presidency, especially when he would be getting involved with Austin.
You to get your ass out of this building!
But Slaughter was the first one, really, that the fans really turned against.
Right. Well, that was partially because of DX.
Because of DX. And then, Slaughter was still the commissioner, but Vince, once the heel Vince emerged, and he was like, I'm the owner, I'm the chairman, all
right,
that stuff.
Right, and it was a slow reveal.
Yeah, you know, that took a year and a half.
Well, there was the initial, like, it slipped kind of thing.
In 96, yeah.
Where, like, it didn't slip. I'm not saying it slipped like it was unplanned. It was, like, a planned slipping of it. Like,
yeah,
where
they slowly started to reveal
like,
Vince
it was something
the owner.
Like, I felt like the initial times were, like, where Sean or Brett would come and yell at Vince.
At Vince, yeah.
Like, and you'd be like, why are they yelling at
why
him?
Why are they yelling at Vince, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Or JR would acknowledge him sometimes as
and
the
then
owner
Austin
and stuff.
Austin really pushed the pedal to the metal on blaming Vince for everything.
Correct, especially when he stunned him.
Right, well, that was we already really knew by that point.
Yeah,
but
that was like the
but in the beginning
the
of Austin
point.
Doing that, like, mm-hmm. Vin, if you recall, when Vince, like, gets stunned, he's like an interviewer in that.
He's still an interviewer then, yeah.
Yeah, he's there to interview Stone Cold.
Right.
Like, that's not, he's not there to have a ruling or anything.
No, he's there to interview him. Anyway, so by the time Vince was the Mr. McMahon character
right.
during the Attitude Era.
Which was post the screw job, right?
Yeah, especially once Austin won the title is when yeah. he was going to wrestle him and all that. So by that time, that is when the template that is still going on today began to get set. And that's what I'm sick of.
The boring, aged
yeah.
template.
So Vince, because he's Vince, he was the most entertaining and groundbreaking version of this
I
that
won't
they've
say it
ever
was,
had.
Yeah, I won't say it was bad when it started.
That's
it
what I'm
going to
say. It was new.
Yeah.
So even though you had a commissioner, which was Slaughter, and then Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, and that's when Vince was running it. But it almost didn't matter that there was a commissioner at
exactly,
that point because
right.
Vince could overrule it, so it didn't
sometimes,
freaking matter.
Sometimes, because it's Russo. Sometimes Austin yeah. was the CEO or something. Or
no, that was because he won like the briefcase thing or whatever that was.
That,
something with Linda. I don't know.
This all goes back to 99 being terrible.
Yeah, I find it interesting. One funny thing about like WWE hierarchies that always made me laugh.
Go on.
Is that everyone owns some weird percentage of the company, and like if you start to dilute it, and like matches where percentages of the company were on the line back in '99, and like this and that, and like I think Shane and Vince won the briefcase, but they were supposed to like 50-50 split their 50%. Like it doesn't make any sense.
I think you might be the commissioner right now, Quinn, because you had stock for a while.
Somehow Ric Flair probably owns it because remember he was he bought something.
Doesn't our great president own the? Oh no, wait, he sold it back.
He
to Vince.
He sold it back to Vince.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac.
Yeah, there's all sorts of nonsense. The percentage of ownership of the WWE in kayfabe is just so, like, weird.
It's extremely weird. So what I was saying is when Vince was the evil authority figure, there was still a commissioner. First Slaughter, then Shawn Michaels, then Mick Foley. And he
yeah.
was fun.
Foley was a good
commissioner. He had an office
yeah.
with, like...
And that's post McMahon, like, revealed.
Right. So, folks, you're probably wondering, how do I miss something that I'm remembering?
Huh?
How do I miss a time where I'm remembering
what?
Times that were fond about the thing I'm talking about,
huh?
Right?
What?
Because it has not changed since then. That
because
is
that
my problem
like
with it.
That was, 20 years ago, what
that
we're
was
talking
about. 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And to this day, especially now with the resplitting of the brands, it's like, I'm the general manager, this is going to be the best show. And then it's like, no, this is going to be the best show.
But then now it's even more now it's even more diluted because you have a commissioner and a GM on one show.
Yeah, I know.
And then they both have to, like, caucus about what they're going to do with, like, what?
I know. You know what's nice? Turning on the TV and the announcers are like, here's going to be your matches tonight.
Yeah.
And then you watch the matches.
Yeah, it's true. And I hearken back for a day where it was just, it was a thing that the announcers would mention offhand that, you know, maybe a ruling came down or this match was signed to be with these rules or whatever.
They would do it so much more succinctly.
Subtly, really.
And subtly. I'm not hearkening back. I'm not saying let's take this shit back to 1981.
No.
What I'm saying is even in the 90s, even during the Attitude Era,
yeah,
you didn't have all of this GM crap wasting everyone's time talking about brands. Brands? Really? Brands? That's what this is boiled down to?
You know what's funny about the WWE now is that they
Nothing is funny about the WWE
listen,
now.
This is just a stupid thing, but they always complain that they don't have enough time on Raw in 3 hours. But wait. Listen, before you get all riled up about
I'll turn my volume down.
Yeah. They complain about that, but then they go and waste 25 minutes on the GM talking about this or that and somebody's always got to fight them or whatever.
Yeah, and
That's like a big portion of the show.
Yeah, I know. And another thing that's overplayed is that there's an authority figure that doesn't like the top face. Enough of that shit.
Yeah,
the last time that was good was when it was Vince McMahon and Steve Austin.
It's never going to be good.
That is the only time it was good. Like, literally, it's never, ever motherfucking been good since then. It sucks. I am so tired of it. It's a stupid, overplayed concept. I just want to watch wrestling matches because the wrestlers want to wrestle and see who's best.
You know, wait. Before we close on this, I just want to give some props to NXT real quick.
Yes, because thank you, I was going to.
Now, Regal is the GM over there, right?
Yeah, but he's not an ass.
He's a silent figure that... He's not as silent as, say, a Jack Tunney, but he's there, and he makes the matches, and people will ask his permission, and blah, 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 right? But when there's a case where there's a problem between a wrestler and him...
Yeah.
It's never Regal pushing the issue. It's the wrestler has a problem with him, not the other way around.
Which is the way it used to be. Wrestlers would have a problem with Tunney, or wrestlers would have a problem
Tunney
with Monsoon.
Tunney didn't pick a fight with them. And it's the same. Regal does the same thing. The wrestlers pick a fight with him. Regal's trying to be fair and impartial. And then, like with this Samoa Joe thing,
right?
It's like Joe has pushed Regal's buttons so hard that he's like, now he's trying to get him out of there.
Right, exactly. Like, so bottom line on this, folks, is it's not that it was always a bad idea.
Hmm.
And on paper, it's not a horrible idea. It's that we have gone so many years now with it being the same general vague format, which is there's an authority figure, generally a heel, sometimes a face, that screws with the people on the show in the name of making the show better.
Somehow that makes it better.
And
yeah.
I'd rather just see wrestlers with real motivation, like, I want to be the best, or I want to kick your ass.
Yeah, I'd rather see the wrestlers fight with each other rather than some authority figure who can't fight.
Exactly. Like, do you want to see Dana White come out before every UFC and, like,
no.
stir shit up for 30
and
minutes?
That brings up, sorry, I know we're going long, but
it
brings up one other thing.
It's fine. Tell Lord Alfred to calm
Lord
his
Alfred,
horses over
yeah,
there.
Calm his horse.
Calm down over there.
What? You know what I can't stand about this authority figure thing they do now?
What?
It's this whole thing with Stephanie, and because she can't get any comeuppance, nobody can touch her.
Right.
That she can just be a big asshole to everyone and nothing ever happens to her.
Right, and just to contrast that real quick, and we're going to wrap up in a second, whereas when it was Vince being a big asshole to Austin, it alternated like almost every week.
Yeah.
Like Vince would get his almost every week or every other week. The bang when he was pissing his pants.
Yeah.
Or Austin would ruin his
car. And I'm not saying that a guy should beat up a girl. I'm not saying
that.
No, I know.
I know
that.
I'm saying
that in some way she, you know, dump mud on her or whatever. I don't know what they can do to get
revenge. That's like a Vince McMahon humor.
They
dump mud on her.
Well, I'm.
Why don't they just take her to What Would You Do and put her in the pie pod?
If you can't physically touch her, then find a way to get her humiliated in such a way where she's gets comeuppance.
I know.
At some
I feel
point.
Like we've been waiting 3 years for that.
She
payoff.
Got it once, and it was like from like Vicky Guerrero, and it didn't matter.
Yeah,
it was like stupid, like, and it didn't affect anything.
No,
like
it didn't. You're right. Yeah. Well, speaking of getting your comeuppance, we're gonna take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
I like sports. I could do something in sports.
Uh-huh. In what capacity?
You know, like the general manager.
Money! that can be tough to get.
Well, it doesn't even have to be the general manager. Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Puppies, JR!
And welcome back to Our Vantage Point, your retro wrestling podcast, episode number 11, this Monday, December 19th. You can tweet at us on the Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us. You could subscribe at where, Quinn?
iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher.
There you go.
I think on you can even subscribe on the Blueberry, I think.
On the Blueberry, go to our website, ovppodcast.com. Give us an iTunes review.
Yeah, we like the reviews.
Send us an email. Yeah, we like this stuff. So our next segment, as we open up our second season here at Our Vantage Point, our next segment is called What Do You Think Of? And each week, Quinn and I will alternate asking each other what we think of something, anything wrestling related. It could be a match, it could be a pay-per-view, it could be a wrestler, it could be a concept, it could be anything. So Quinn, go for it.
I thought I'd start with a fun, goofy one.
All right.
What do you think of Hercules?
That is a fun, goofy one. Okay, Hercules.
Hercules Hernandez.
Hercules Hernandez, as he was originally known.
Yeah.
What's
your feelings?
I'm not entirely familiar of his pre-WWF work.
I don't think it really matters.
It doesn't. If anything didn't matter, Hercules before WWF doesn't matter. Yeah, you're right.
And Hercules after WWF didn't matter.
And Hercules in general really doesn't matter.
I guess we'll focus on the WWF run.
Well, I know that when he came in, he looked a lot different, which I liked. He had, like, a different garb, and he had, like, the fro or something like
that.
Well,
you know what's...
I liked that version of him.
You know what's a little weird about Hercules?
What?
I always thought it was odd that, like, they would actually refer to him like he was a Greek god or something.
See, that didn't make sense. He started off just being a guy named Hercules Hernandez.
Right.
Like, his name was Hercules Hernandez.
Right.
And then it turned into, somehow... He wasn't just a guy named Hercules.
Right.
He was Hercules. He was pulling down pillars and stuff like that.
He was talking about pulling down the pillars of Rome.
It made no sense.
And it's just like thousands of years ago when I took these chains and I pulled down the pillars of Rome.
Okay, if you're going to make him like Hercules the...
You're going to justify this. Go ahead. I want to hear this.
I'm not even justifying. I'm saying this is what they did wrong. As if you're going to make him like the Hercules, right?
Uh-huh.
Then why is he like... Not, like, invincible.
Well, was like, Hercules invincible?
He's a god or whatever, right? Isn't he?
I don't know. Is he a god?
Isn't he a Greek god?
Of what?
Of heroicness? I don't know.
Heroicness.
But he's you know, he's a mythical figure. Let's put it that way, right?
He was just a steroided-up wrestler was the problem.
Right.
And that's how they treated him.
It's just a weird thing. It's like... And I feel like we're supposed to think his background story is actually, like, if you read about Hercules, like, in Greek history or something, like, that they never, it's never clarified. Like,
I don't know.
It's one of the weirdest things
it
ever.
Is.
Like, even when I first started watching wrestling and I went back and watched the tapes, I, like, never got
I never got it either.
I was like, I don't understand. Like, and I also thought it was just a really lazy thing for, like, just a thing in wrestling. Like... Hey, remember Hercules? Let's just make a character called Hercules.
Like, yeah, I know. They might as well have just done, like, Atlas.
Yeah, they could have done anyone. They could have Zeus. Well, they did Zeus.
They did Zeus.
But he wasn't that Zeus.
He was somewhat invincible, though.
Yeah, he was, but he wasn't, like... They didn't go, oh, that's Zeus from the stories.
He was also really good in Friday.
Yeah.
And the Fifth Element.
His name is also Tiny.
Tiny Lister.
Teeny
Lister.
Yeah.
So back to Hercules. I like Hercules... From, like, his 86, 87-ish period.
I like him at WrestleMania 3.
I like him at 3 against Billy Jerkins.
When he beats the poo out of Billy Jerk with the chain.
Yeah, and I like him at WrestleMania 2, off the top of my head.
Ricky Steamboat.
Ricky Steamboat, thank you.
I don't know, he's like okay at that.
I like that version of him.
It's okay, yeah, with the leather, whatever that is.
I'll tell you what match sucks a shit, though, is his match against Warrior at WrestleMania 4.
I forgot about
awful,
that.
Awful, awful wrestling.
Yeah, he is... He never was the best.
No, but he had some periods of time of not being horrible.
Yeah, but I always sensed they wanted him to be like the Intercontinental Champion or something.
I don't know. I mean, you know what? He had a pretty high profile match against the Hawkster, Hulk Hogan, at Saturday Night's Main Event, and I think
That was like the last time he was heel, right?
November? No, no, no. November of 86, I think.
Never mind, yeah.
And then he had a good IC title match against Steamboat in May of 87, I want to say. And you could say the guy could work sometimes.
Yeah, he could when he wanted to.
But once 88 hit, oh my gosh, he was awful in 88, and then...
But that's when they start giving the big push to him.
That's because he turned face. DiBiase tries to buy him as a slave or something like that, remember?
And How does Hercules, the Greek god, a slave? I don't understand.
He's not. He didn't take the contract.
I guess he's not a Greek. What is Hercules again?
I think he was
like somebody's son or something.
The actual mythological Hercules?
I think he's like Zeus's son.
He's Kevin Sorbo.
Stop. No. No. He's like, he lives on Earth, and he's like the son of a god and a person or something.
I don't know.
He's like a mix.
This isn't our retro mythology podcast,
yeah,
Quinn.
But I'm saying, like, how could he be a slave if he's also that?
How could
he
be retro mythology? Is there any current mythology?
No, there isn't current mythology. The WWE is current mythology. Yeah.
So, he was okay as a face, but he wasn't like a great face. No. I do like Earthquake squashing him at WrestleMania 6. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it is pretty fun.
What do you think of Power and Glory Hercules?
I have a problem with that.
I knew you did.
He looks completely different.
He looks horrible.
He looks like garbage.
He looks like he should be working at a junkyard somewhere.
Why does he look like
selling
he's a different...
scrap metal?
Did he shave some facial hair?
Yes,
he did. He looks like a different person.
He only had a mustache.
And his hair is different, too. He's got more
greasy.
Of a mullet.
He's all chubby.
Yeah.
He has pants.
It's like they were like, Paul Roma's got to look young and good compared to him. So, Hercules, just look like you rolled out of bed and don't do anything to take care of yourself.
That's basically probably the truth.
Yeah. He looked like dog shit. And somehow Slick's involved.
Yeah, that was a waste of Slick, too.
Yeah.
No Jive Soul, bro, for Power and Glory.
Yeah, what even... Did they have music?
I don't even know if they had music.
I don't remember.
It was probably just the sound of them grunting while they lifted weights.
They were always on pay-per-view, already in the ring, which I always thought was weird.
They got the jobber entrance, right?
Yeah,
always.
Yeah, always. And they had those stupid sunglasses on with
the pink...
The red pink thing on the side of
yeah,
them.
They looked like idiots.
They looked terrible. I do think their name was good.
That's
Power
great,
and Glory
great
is a great
name,
but when you treat them like jobbers... And then they have to have that match with the Rockers where Marty Jannetty gets injured. Or,
no, Michaels.
Or Shawn Michaels gets injured, right.
Yep.
And then they kind of like...
They kill them. They kill Jannetty.
I thought that would have elevated them, but they kind of were nothing after that.
I've heard through the grapevine that before Vince signed the Nasty Boys... that Power and Glory was in line for somewhat of a push. But then he got his hands on the Nasty Boys later in 90 after SummerSlam. So all that shit went out the window.
No offense, but why were the Nasty Boys ever considered a big deal? They're just big fat idiots.
They were unique, actually. Their gimmick was somewhat unique.
Mm-hmm.
They were dressed in all black. They were kind of just like rough assholes.
Yeah, but they always seem like goofs. I mean, when you're hanging out with the Mountie, it's hard to take you seriously.
Plus, they were managed by Jimmy Hart, the B manager.
Yeah, exactly.
That was always a strike against
it's
you.
Just problems. I don't know. I just never really. It just never seemed to me like the Nasty Boys were ever gonna. I was always surprised that they won the tag titles. To be honest with you,
would you have taken a Power and Glory run instead of the Nasties run?
That's a tough question because I don't like Power and Glory much either. But
yeah, I know.
Why would it taken a Rockers run? Why couldn't we have that? Like,
don't know. That's one of the unanswered questions in wrestling mythology.
That's if there's anybody in that year and time that should have had the belts, it was them.
Well, they did give them to him, if you remember.
Yeah,
against the Hearts,
but not really.
But they didn't.
Yeah, because the ring rope broke.
That's the fake reason.
Wait, that is the fake. I thought the match just stunk.
It wasn't very good. It's not horrible, but that's the kayfabe reason. It was because Vince was going to fire Neidhart. And then he decided, I don't know, because why? But Jim Neidhart sucks.
Well, he did have a lot of drug
problems.
He
really does suck.
Remember the time this is way later in time, but remember the time when he broke into somebody's house and went in their medicine cabinet and stole their pills and he got arrested?
No.
Yeah, that happened.
Oh.
That was like in the last couple years.
Oh, Anvil.
Yeah.
But then didn't Danny Spivey come and help him?
That's what happened. Danny Spivey helped him. It's true.
My dad will listen to Danny.
And then he was like, lives are going to be
yeah,
in Danny Spivey's hands.
Gary Spivey's hands.
Yeah, Gary.
So back to Hercules. What do I think of him overall? 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
He's not very good.
You know what they always messed up on? Just one
what?
Last thing. That when you went to Power and Glory, but I wanted to say one other thing.
Keep going. Yeah, it's fine.
They messed up when he was when he turned face, it made that chain useless. Like, he just never used it anymore. He had it, but it was like it didn't do anything.
You know what? It's like how the Boss Man's nightstick became useless when he turned face.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, this is like one of the trademark things of this character, and he just never gets to use it.
I never thought of that. You're right.
Yeah.
He went from busting Billy Jerk Haynes in the face with it to fighting the Ultimate Warrior with it.
Right.
To just losing.
Yeah, it sucked.
He was a loser. Overall, Hercules was a loser.
Yeah, he stunk.
I mean, it's sad because, you know, he died in the early 2000s, and he was probably a decent guy, probably a good human being, you know?
I had never heard a bad thing about him. It wasn't like that. It was
professional.
Just, I'm just talking from
a wrestling aspect. He kind of, I'm not going to say he was the worst thing, because he wasn't. He wasn't the worst thing ever.
No.
He had an interesting look in his earlier years before he got all bloated.
Yeah. He just never amounted to anything, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I know. And it's sad because I think he did have the potential earlier on in the 80s, in the mid-80s. And I think he probably was much more motivated back then.
He was. He was hungry, you could tell.
Yeah. And then you could tell in the 90s that he ate because he looked like an Alka-Seltzer commercial. Yeah.
Looked like
he looked like somebody's bloated grandpa after Thanksgiving. He didn't look good, sorry.
No, he didn't look good.
He did not look good, just greasy,
And I don't think he ever went anywhere after WWE, right?
Well, he went to WCW as, I want to say, Super Invader number 2 in 92. I don't think he was ever unmasked.
That's what we meant at the beginning about there's really nothing else to say.
He went to Japan, and he teamed with, this is actually a cool sounding team, I don't know how it was. Hercules and Scott Norton were a team in Japan.
I could see that. They kind of look like the same thing. But
yeah, that was around 94. I don't know what he did after that. I know he probably retired in the late 90s.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And that was kind of it. A little bit of a wasted potential, honestly.
Yeah, almost a missed opportunity.
Yeah,
you could
call it a missed opportunity, but we won't call it that.
No,
that's
but
not
that's
what
not what
anymore.
We do on season two.
So what's your overall verdict on Hercules?
A lot of potential, like you said, but just kind of just wasted.
Kind of just wasted, yeah.
A wasted opportunity.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Decent, but not great.
I think turning him face was a fatal error. In the end.
Yep. I agree. I don't know how much more mileage they could have had. They should have just fired him in 89.
Aw.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I mean, like, you know.
I don't know. I feel like every time I watch WrestleMania 6, I'm like, comforted that he's there.
You know,
so it's like
I'm glad you brought up WrestleMania 6 because our next segment is called One of My Favorites. And in this segment, Quinn and I will alternate sharing one of our favorite things from wrestling's past. And believe it or not, mine was and still is WrestleMania 6.
We didn't plan that, folks.
No,
I
that's
swear.
Not planned, but yeah. It was good timing and it is time to segue. Anyway, so WrestleMania 6, I'll set the stage here a little bit.
Go for it.
This was a big deal. Whereas the previous two WrestleManias had been held at sweaty-ass, cocaine-filled, drunken, cigar-smoky Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino in beautiful Atlantic City, New Jersey, our home state of New Jersey.
Owned at the time by the President of the United States.
Yes, Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
And three was held at, you know, 93,000 or 78, if you believe Meltzer. I don't really care what the attendance is. Don't tell us about it.
It looks like 93,000 to me.
But I really could give a shit.
Yeah.
It's a lot of freaking people. How about that?
It's a lot, yeah.
And that was in Pontiac, Michigan, Hogan Andre. So that was a big dome show. Then you have these 2 years of dump.
2 years,
you know,
of a convention hall or whatever.
Yeah, just awful crowds, just terrible. I mean, the cards were, I mean, four was really shitty. Five was not much better. Good main event. Then six happens.
I love six.
And me too.
It's so good.
Six is awesome. Six is the first international WrestleMania. It's in Toronto, Canada.
Canada, yeah.
The Sky Dome, which had just opened a year before.
Brand new. Toronto Blue Jays Stadium.
Yep. Brand new.
Open ceiling. The ceiling could open, but it wasn't open at WrestleMania.
It wasn't open, no. Over 60,000 people. Maybe around 66, 67, I don't remember.
A gigantic Jumbotron, which was new back then.
Yeah, it was actually a very large screen.
Yeah.
And they brought back the motorized carts from WrestleMania 3.
I love that.
I know, me too. A lot of people do.
I feel like it's a souped-up version of 3.
It is. It's
not as good as 3, but it's like a...
No, it's not as good as 3.
It's more
right.
polished than 3.
It's more polished than 3.
You know what's a thing I know we're not talking about 3 right now.
Go ahead, though.
But you know what's the thing about 3 that's really weird?
Mm.
I always felt like after the Macho Man Steamboat match, all of a sudden it gets really, really dark in that place. Like,
no, it did.
But when you're in Sky Dome, on the other hand,
it's always dark.
It's always the right lighting.
Yeah,
the lighting's
it's
perfect.
It's always dark. Yeah. So WWF really did a great job, and this was a really big... This is that match, Hulk Hogan, world champion, title for title against the Intercontinental Champion Ultimate Warrior. That is your definition, folks, of a main event.
Title for title? Of course it is. In any wrestling, yes.
That is
I still wish they would do a title for title main event at WrestleMania again. They never did it again, right? Not that I know of.
I feel like
you could have even done it. Even the nowadays and a couple years when they had the split, I never understood why the two world champions didn't fight at WrestleMania once.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it never happened.
Yeah. This
match was a huge deal, though, because you had Hulk Hogan, and in 90... he was still Hulk Hogan.
Oh, he was still the man.
This is pretty much the end of the original
run.
84 to 90 Hogan run.
It was intended to be.
And you had the up-and-coming Ultimate Warrior, who was a sensation. He had come on the scene in 87.
He was over.
Won the Intercontinental title from the Honky Tonk Man in 88.
And WrestleMania 6, he has his best hair ever.
Yeah, he does have awesome hair at 6.
Yeah.
So that's your main event. But not only that, folks, here's what else is going on. You've got the last appearance of Andre the Giant.
Which is a big deal.
He was a tag champion with Haku.
His only real title.
Yep.
Because I really don't count that world title.
No. I know.
He's claimed to be the world champion, but he's not.
Actually, he claimed to be the world tag team championship.
The world tag team championship.
Yeah, he claimed, but I'm saying in the title history, if you go on the .com even now, Andre considered a champion, but that didn't really count.
No.
For like 3 seconds,
yeah,
he was a champion.
I know. So you've got them facing Demolition, the consummate definition of a Vince McMahon WWF 1980s team.
That's what I was going to say. Total 1980s team.
Yep.
Like, just awesome.
In the same way that someone we like, James Wolfe, said that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, is the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s, WrestleMania 6 is the wrestling equivalent. This is the pay-per-view. This is the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s.
It's almost, for
better or for worse.
It's kind of funny because there's a parallel to be found here. If you know, WrestleMania 17 was the end of the
Attitude Era,
and that was also in Sky Dome, if I recall.
No, it was in Houston. 18 was in Sky Dome.
Oh.
You were close, though. It's okay.
You
were off by a year. It's not bad, Quinn.
Still, it's the first stadium show in a long time also.
17, yeah, it was. So let's get back to 6 here. So so you have the tag team match that I just mentioned. Not only that, you have some new faces, like Earthquake.
Right.
Who was not an 80s guy, but who did he fight?
He fought Hercules.
Who was an 80s guy, right?
Right, yeah.
And he squashes the crap out of him.
He beats the poop.
So I'm not going to do a match-by-match rundown, but you have up-and-coming Rick Martel, who was an 80s face in, like...
In the opener,
Yeah, and he's fighting another 80s guy, Coco Beware.
Yeah.
Who lingered around, but he was always a JTTS after that.
No, he was never as big as he was.
Never.
After. Yeah.
You know, so... That's just a feel for the card. I'm not going to run down the whole thing. People have done reviews of it. We're not here to do a review
of the
show.
Here's the thing about the card.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't want anyone to get the impression like this is the best wrestling
card. No, it's not.
No, and I mean it in even a work rate. It's not.
No, it's definitely not.
But, it hits all the check marks of feel good. Like, just everything just feels good
at
this WrestleMania.
Great atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's even the interviews...
The interviews are fantastic.
You've got Rona Barrett interviewing Elizabeth. That's a personal favorite of me and Quinn.
Oh, Rona.
Hello, Rona. Well, thank you, Rona. You haven't nearly been as active in the World Wrestling Federation.
Well, it's true that most of my participation in the World Wrestling Federation these days has been in an advisory capacity.
Oh, thank you, Rona.
Thank you, Rona.
I'll have to put some of this in
advisory
post.
Capacity.
Yeah, it's too good to not put in somewhere in post.
Brutus
but...
the Barber Beefcake, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake, what are you doing?
That's Sean Mooney. Brutus the Barber Beefcake, what are you doing? Then there's also the whole, like, porn. Oh, Jesse Ventura was in porn.
Yeah.
And Gorilla's like, no, we want to see the footage.
Wait a minute. X-rated type stuff.
Wait a minute.
We have the footage.
John is standing by with the Macho Kid.
Yeah. And also the Jake the Snake Everest promo.
Wallowing in the muck. Of avarice.
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 Wallowing in the muck of avarice.
Avarice. Yes. Sorry, yes.
It's quite all right.
It's a big word. I'm sorry.
And they're doing the wave during that match because it gets boring for a while.
Yeah, and Jesse gets excited about it.
Look, they're doing the wave, Monsoon.
It's coming to us.
Coming to you, Gorilla here. Stand up. It's to us.
That's another thing I wanted to mention. Is Jesse Ventura, that's his last pay-per-view. He stuck around till August, but that's his last pay-per-view with, and he's the consummate heel commentator of the 80s.
Right.
And he's with the consummate face commentator of the 80s, Gorilla Monsoon.
Yep.
That's their last time together.
It's sad.
And they are awesome at that
show.
They're
really good. And Jesse really does a good job making that show feel big, and so does Gorilla,
as usual.
So does
Gorilla, as usual,
and their banter is great.
It's hysterical.
You know, mustard on the lapels.
Yeah,
and the,
stuffing another hot dog down during every interview.
You get yourself in the street!
A hot dog again!
No, I didn't have any!
You've only had seven! You got mustard all over your lapels!
I do not!
Look at you, you're a mess, Monsoon!
I also like the fact that they call back again to Terry, Tyrell, and Jade.
Yes. Always.
65,000 plus two, me and
yeah,
you.
Yep.
Another thing they used to say.
Yep. And there's also Jesse Ventura during the mixed tag match.
Yeah.
Which
it's Rhodes Touch Sherry first.
Yep.
Rhodes Touch Sherry first.
He's on Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire throughout that entire match.
It's good.
He's hilarious. Quinn and I would often say, because we've watched this show separately and together numerous times, and what do we say that WrestleMania 6 is like, Quinn?
WrestleMania 6 is an old friend.
It's an old friend. You can turn it on at any time.
It never lets you down.
It never lets you down. It's just a feel-good show. So, again, if you're looking for the work rate, go watch something from fucking Japan, okay?
Yeah.
All right? But, like, honestly, if you just want to... If you're a retro wrestling fan
and you
want
to feel good.
You want to feel good 3 hours, you could throw on WrestleMania 6 as we've done at random intervals in our lives as teenagers, as in our 20s, and now in our 30s.
As adults.
It never lets me down. It's a feel-good show. It is one of my personal favorite WrestleManias.
I want to watch it right now, just talking
seriously,
about it. It's so good.
It's got so many classic, to us anyway, but like just really fun little moments. I mean, you think about some of the things that happened there. Demolition won their final tag team titles
there. They three-peated.
And that was it. Demolition turned heel shortly after that.
The music.
With their horrible music.
Yeah.
The Hart Foundation reemerged because they really weren't that big a deal
for a while. Living shit out of the Bolsheviks, like in an awesome fashion.
19 seconds or something.
Like heart attack immediately to them.
Which reminds me, there's a very funny segment with them in the bathroom with Steve Allen.
I'm hearing this proper acoustic environment. and then he does the Polish national anthem.
But it's not really
the Polish national anthem.
Pop Goes the Weasel.
Yeah. There's just so many. The celebrities at this WrestleMania are just.
Steve Allen's funny.
He does the Snuka match with the That's My Wife's Underwear.
Yeah. Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah.
Wearing my wife's underwear.
He's wearing my wife's underwear.
You got
Rona Barrett does her job well.
Rona Barrett's fine, yeah.
Yep.
Who else?
Robert Goulet
at the opening.
By the way, Quinn and I know the words to the Canadian national anthem, and it's because of WrestleMania 6.
Basically. I mean, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't
I'm not
know
Canadian.
It. Yeah, we wouldn't know it.
Scott
otherwise.
Would know it, but
Scott Keith.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, he's Canadian, but we know it.
Yep.
I also know the Russian national anthem, even though I don't speak Russian.
Yeah, and we could sing it for you. I don't think we should.
No, I don't think that's a good idea. But it's just a great, great WrestleMania.
It's also got the last pay per view appearance of Randy Savage before he started wearing the stupid cowboy hat.
He's got no shirt on.
And he's got no shirt on.
Yep. That's all that really needs to be said about that.
It's Mr. Perfect's first acknowledged defeat, even though he had lost at house shows. He was allegedly still undefeated.
Yeah.
And
Beefcake. Well, that was supposed to be the big ending to the Perfect streak, right?
Yes, and then Beefcake obviously was the guy that beat him and was supposed to again beat him at SummerSlam until he power sailed and broke his face. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they had to replace him, and that never really worked out.
So really, accidentally, it's the end of Brutus Beefcake as the Brutus Beefcake
from
the 80s.
But you could argue that Boss Man's getting a huge push at that Mania.
That's the other thing. Boss Man, who was a heel,
now I love.
Is now a
this
big
is
face.
A moment I love at this show. Is right before that, DiBiase has a really long match, the match we were talking about with the wave with Jake the Snake.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes almost.
And, first of all, actually, let's dive into that a little bit because it plays all into it.
Yeah.
Is that at the end of it, like, kind of Jake is getting the snake and all this stuff, and Virgil has to run away with the $1 million belt, and he freaking full
flies,
like, really fast. He, flies down without DiBiase, right?
Yep.
And then he drops the $1 million belt off in the back, and then he flies back out and saves DiBiase at the last second before Jake's about to finally get the snake on around his neck or whatever.
Yep, yep.
Fantastic moment.
Yep.
But then in all of this, what you're not supposed to notice is Virgil only pulled him out. He didn't bring him to the back.
Right.
Now, DiBiase comes back later,
mm-hmm.
but in such a way where he's related to the Boss Man versus Akeem match.
Yeah, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, actually, too, when we were talking about the Boss Man. Boss Man, DiBiase tried to bribe the Boss Man a few weeks before WrestleMania.
And it led to the Twin Towers breaking up.
Correct. So Boss Man was now fighting Akeem
at WrestleMania to blow off that first before he fought DiBiase, right?
Yep. So what happens?
So what ends up happening is that you're not really supposed to notice this, but DiBiase made his way under the ring. And in the middle of the Boss Man match, DiBiase comes out of freaking nowhere and attacks the Big Boss Man, but the Big Boss Man somehow figures out a way to win or whatever.
Yeah,
but,
yep.
Yeah, it's just a good little touch that I like how those two things were connected.
Very simply, too.
Yeah.
No GM coming out and doing a 20-minute promo.
Yeah, they were just connected through various things just going on in the World Wrestling Federation at the time,
that's
as Rhonda Barrow would say.
World Wrestling Federation. Oh, speaking of celebrities, Mary Tyler Moore is there, interviewed by Shawn Mooney. She clearly has no idea what's going on.
Yep, she doesn't even want to be interviewed, you could
tell. No, she has no idea what
and
to say.
And she'll always be Mary Hart to me or whatever.
Mary Richards.
Mary Richards, that's what Mooney says.
Yeah, she's not Mary Hart. That's,
no, sorry.
WrestleMania 3 is Mary Hart.
Always Mary Richards to me, yes.
You know, Mary Hart was very good at WrestleMania 3,
by the
way.
Oh, she was excellent.
Her and Euchre, man.
Way better than Susan St. James at WrestleMania 2.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
That's another topic altogether. But so, yeah, WrestleMania 6. It's so awesome.
And before we wrap this one up, you know, right before the main event, Rick Rude squashes Jimmy Snuka, another 80s superstar.
That's a good thread you noticed there.
Right. Yeah. So you get to the main event, and this, folks, is, like I said, the definition, main event. You know, you got your Hogan Andre, that's a main event, right?
Right.
Hogan Savage, that's a main event. And this is another one where it's Hogan Warrior. That's a
title
main
for
event.
Title.
Yeah, title for title. The
I
first
love,
time they ever fought.
I love the visual of the Intercontinental title around the Warrior's waist and Hogan with the world title around his waist. It's one of those. They always do it nowadays with the nose-to-nose.
Yeah.
But back then, them wearing their belts nose-to-nose, looking at it was so epic.
Yep.
And Hebner picking up both of the belts and holding them up. And
they
look larger than life. Like, they look so important.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, holy crap. Like, this is what I always wanted because they always had talked about if you're the Intercontinental Champion, you're really the first in line for the world title.
Right,
and now it's finally happening
with
the added caveat that the IC title's also on the line.
Exactly.
Like,
it was unprecedented. It was way before the days of overexposure. These two did not wrestle before this.
Yeah, it was set up at the Rumble.
It was set up at the Rumble. Yes,
they ran into each other in the Royal Rumble.
And it was just like...
by accident.
These were two big faces. There was no pre-existing history.
No.
It worked because Hogan was Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, and it worked because the Warrior was the Ultimate Warrior.
And they were each champions.
Now, they also had a great promos before this, too, if we're going to talk about the build-up a little bit.
They did. I mean...
that planes crashing in.
Yeah, the Warrior was just... I mean, Hogan was nuts as usual, but Warrior was especially nuts.
It was like they were trying to out-nuts each other's promos, but they're memorable.
And this is the last of, like I said, the 80s version of Hulk Hogan. Because anything after this, he's an insufferable asshole. He just is, and he's like thinner looking, like he looks weird, he's less steroidy.
He seems to have a chip on his shoulder that I don't like
after
this.
He's just so dicky after this.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he was always the most upstanding guy.
No, but at least
there's a different charm about
this.
The
chip wasn't there as much as it is during
this. Right, it was more like a crumb.
Yeah.
It becomes a freaking Pringle later on.
It's a big black and white cookie, like chocolate chip cookie, whatever kind of cookie. I thought the black and white because it's bigger than the chocolate chip, but...
Mm. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
I like those.
Yeah, they're good.
Black and white?
Black and white cookie,
they're good, yeah. So you finally have this main event, and man, this is not like... You know, this is the days before the smark crowds. Yeah, I know the internet was around back then, but it was like 18 people. This is before the smarks, everybody, okay?
Yeah, and they were on like a message forum, and they couldn't even talk in real time.
Yeah, they're on fucking Usenet or RSPW... dot rec dot sports, whatever the hell it was. Dot fuck you.
Yeah.
So basically, Hogan Warrior and the crowd, I swear, really is like 50-50.
50-50.
There's no booing.
And the roof is literally blowing off this place. Like, it's so loud.
Yeah, I know.
It's so loud.
There's no booing.
There's no booing.
It's just cheering when anyone does anything.
And I love the ending because, A, Hogan loses. And this is a big deal at the time because Hogan never loses
clean,
at WrestleMania ever.
Just clean ever.
Ever. Yeah, clean.
Even Andre didn't beat him clean.
And then Hogan, like, very awesomely comes in with his belt, puts
crying.
It over his shoulder,
crying.
Like it's like he's never going to be the champion again. And, like, people kind of thought that, too.
Yeah.
He hands the belt to Warrior, raises his hand, and the visual of Warrior doing his Warrior arms in the
with
air thing
belts.
With both belts, I'll never forget it. It's awesome.
It is awesome. It is one of the great moments. And if it ended right there and they lived happily ever after, that would have been great. It didn't. Hogan went on. He made Suburban Commando. He came back. He was still the main focus.
Warrior push never worked.
Warrior push never worked, and so on and so forth. You know
the
story.
Rest is history.
But as a self-contained event to watch.
Fantastic.
And also, especially with the context of it being the end of a lot of the 80s mentality
right.
and stars.
Yeah.
And the beginning of a new era, again, for better or for worse. I'm not saying the new era was great.
No, but, you know,
91
whatever.
Was good. 92 was good.
It wasn't the true end of the
era.
It
wasn't, but
there was about 2 years left, but...
But there was a lot of torch passing going on implicitly at WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
Because just for comparison, the next pay-per-view had Vince McMahon and Roddy Piper on commentary.
Yeah,
the next pay-per-view
everything
had the LOD.
Starts to change. Yeah.
Yeah, the next pay-per-view had Power and Glory.
Yeah.
The next pay-per-view had Earthquake as the main heel.
The Rockers are more prominent.
Yeah, their match it sucked at WrestleMania 6. You always make fun. One final closing note. You always, and it always laughs, I always laugh about the ending to the Rockers match because of Jannetty. What do you always, like, he just, like, gets the salt in his eye and...
He gets the salt in his eye and he just, like, trips over the railing and looks like a freaking idiot.
Yeah, he just looks
He also looks like, because of the salt in his eye, it's like you can see, like, the cocaine on him, practically. Like seriously, though, because you know the reason they lost was because one of them was high.
They were probably both high and fucked up.
The reason they probably were... I guarantee you they were supposed to go over, and they saw them that day, and they said, uh-uh.
You don't think so? I don't know. I thought that they were probably...
The Orient Express beating them? Come on.
And that's the shitty version.
And not even to mention the ending is, like, a weird count-out dumb thing, so it's like, to me, it seemed like they were protecting them, but they were also punishing them.
I don't know, man.
It's terrible.
It is terrible. But you know what's not terrible?
What?
Taking a break. So we'll be back right after this.
Oh, hi, folks. I'm here in this appropriate acoustic environment to rehearse the Russian national anthem with my favorite Soviet Union tag team partners, Nikolai Volkov and Boris Yukov. You ready, guys? Okay, I don't plan to hit it that hard, but I'll do my best. I get no kick from Ukraine.
Hey, that's not the Russian national anthem.
I know that. It's just a little joke to warm up the crowd. Give us a break here. Okay, here we go.
Hey
yourself. I know it's not the Russian national anthem. What is it?
You play the Polish national anthem.
Well, send your postcards directly to him. Anyway, we're still warming up. Here we go now. A one and a two and... Perestroika and Glasnost, I dig them the utmost. And how is your sister tonight?
Hey, we're getting hot for you, warming up. Let's go.
Enough with the hay. No more stalling. Okay, let's do one from the heart, folks. Let's do one for the homeland. Let's hear it for Mother Russia. Here we go.
Hey,
I don't believe you. Take it easy. On that note, this is Steve Allen in the speed stick room. Sending it back up to you, Jesse. I'm going to get out of here. You can get killed around here.
And welcome back to our Vantage Point, your retro wrestling podcast, episode number 11. It is unfortunately time for our final segment, Quinn.
It's been quite an episode,
It's been quite an episode. New format, new season, season two.
Yeah, we're getting used to it.
We are getting used to it here at OVP from Script Sketch Studios.
In New Jersey.
In beautiful New Jersey. We are ready for our last segment. This is a new one, of course. And in this segment, it's called We're Reviewing Something.
Yeah.
That's right. We're actually going to review something.
We've heard the requests.
We've heard the requests. Now, it's not your freaking pay-per-views. Everyone does that.
No.
It's not your weekly episodes of Raw and Nitro.
And we're not going to go in any particular order either.
No, we are going to give you a random smattering of syndicated or you know, network shows that WWF did, NWA, who knows, maybe Global, maybe Smoky Mountain.
Who knows? We'll see where it, we'll see where it takes our viewing taste take us.
Right, but our taste took us to 1978 this time around.
Then now we're really going back.
We are digging deep. This is a review of WWWF.
Extra W.
Extra W. Worldwide Federation Championship Wrestling.
Worldwide Wrestling Federation. You sound like Andre right now.
Hello. Championship Wrestling from December 16th, 1978. Long before we were born.
And boy, was it something.
It was something. We sat down and we watched this together, and we have some notes here. And basically what I'm going to do, and Quinn is going to do, is we're going to run you through the card. There are no star ratings.
Oh, this definitely doesn't dictate any star ratings, I'll tell you that much.
There is no match play-by-play. This is just our general notes, thoughts, observations from the show. So Championship Wrestling, just so you know, folks, that was one of their main shows, actually. Was it not,
it
Quinn?
It was basically like what Raw is. And it was, you know, it was predated Superstars, which was the main show.
Championship Wrestling turned into Superstars in 1986.
Yes. And Championship Wrestling was preceded by Heavyweight Wrestling.
Right. In the 50s or 60s.
Yeah, Heavyweight Wrestling became the B show, and Championship Wrestling became the A show.
Right. So this is the A show from the Worldwide Wrestling Federation in 1978, at a time where they were actually still members of the NWA.
Also, Vince Jr. did not own the company.
Vince Jr. did not own the company.
Although he's involved.
He is the announcer. So the show opens with Vince McMahon and Bruno Sammartino as his co-host.
With
and
big freaking afro.
Bruno has a giant fro. He looks ludicrous. They're both wearing these canary yellow suits.
Now, with the resolution of these old shows, those yellow jackets like shine, like the fuzz around them is shining.
They look like peeps.
They look like chickens. They're like the gobbledygookers.
They basically look like two gobbledygookers, and they run down the card. So here's what we have in store for this show. We have newcomer Greg Valentine, who is well known in the South, according to Vince.
This is his debut. In the Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
We have the thrilling team, my description, not Vince's, of Larry Zbysko and Tony Garea.
Nabisco.
We have the return of the Valiant Brothers. More on that later. And then we open with a Fred Blassie promo, and he is with who, Quinn?
He's with the High Chief, right?
Yeah, but what is Peter Maivia? Not a face,
This is very weird. I've never seen in all my, like, years of watching wrestling, and you know how the WWF, like, that's the Rock's dad, granddad, whatever.
Yeah, yep.
You know, like, I've never seen them say that he was ever a heel.
I didn't know he was a heel, so shame on us, I guess, right? We didn't know that. Not only is Peter Maivia a heel, he's the number one contender.
He's managed by Blassie, that's different.
And he has a mustache.
Yes, he looks cool, actually.
He actually looks a lot cooler.
Yeah.
And he's got a watch on, but like his usual Samoan garb.
Yeah, it's weird because isn't he supposed to be like some kind of like...
Is he like a fucking Rolex on?
He's supposed to be like some kind of native, but he has a Rolex. Yeah.
So they cut this pretty unmemorable promo, and Blassie looks like fucking Leslie Nielsen in Airplane.
Yeah, he looks like that.
I don't know why.
Is he wearing a baby blue?
Yes,
that's what
he is. And then Maivia ends the promo with this great line, I'm gonna make him feel so like that much.
And he signals with his finger like
an inch.
Because I'm gonna make him feel so like that much.
Like an inch,
he makes
yeah.
an inch with his finger.
And he's talking about Bob Backlund.
He's the number one contender to Bob Backlund's title. So we move to our first match, and it's Quinn's favorite ring announcer, the guy that's 109 years old.
What is his even...
I don't know what his name is.
And this... God, nah.
Here in the corner to my right...
Greg Valentine!
So he introduces all the fucking commissioners and all these other authorities and stuff.
Right.
And of course, your ringside doctor is none other than... George Zahorian.
And if you don't know who he is, that's the guy that basically the trial where Vince like almost lost everything. Like it was the Zahorian trial.
The Zahorian trial, the steroid guy.
The steroid guy is in attendance.
Also very notable is two of the referees are named Dick.
Is that true?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Two of the referees, Dick Kroll and Dick Worley. Dick Worley.
Dick Worley. Dick Whirl.
That does not sound
that
good.
That doesn't sound great.
I don't want that done to me. I'm just going to put it that way. So anyway, the referee, Quinn noted this, has the zebra stripe shirt on.
Very weird, because usually every ref back then looks like a janitor. He does have the zebras, but he does have unofficial pants.
He has, like, khakis on or something?
No, he has bell-bottoms on.
Oh, bell-bottom, like, but they're, like, weird-colored.
What's weird about the bell-bottoms back then is that those same bell-bottoms dragged into the 80s for a lot of refs, if you ever notice,
right,
before Vince standardized the ref gear. But
that's true, which was the mid-80s.
Yeah.
So our
back
first...
then, you could wear whatever the hell you
yeah,
wanted.
Yeah, they, like, seemingly didn't care.
Yeah.
You could wear, like, a mechanics outfit, and they didn't give a shit.
Some have zebra stripes, some have...
some have, like, custodian outfit.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing.
So we open with our first contest. It's Greg Valentine making his WWF debut, and he's managed by the Grand Wizard apparently.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, back then it seems like there's only, like, there's those big three managers, and, like, that's it. Like,
Albano, Lassie, and Wizard.
It feels like every big heel has a manager, too, by the way.
You're right.
There's no not managed heels.
And they were a good mouthpiece, but, you know, they were also implied to be working out all the contracts, like we said earlier.
It's mentioned.
All the deals.
You know, the deals, yeah. They talk about it, all right.
So, Greg Valentine fights one of Quinn's least favorite jobbers, Steve King.
Steve King. The only reason I know about Steve King is because, basically, we've watched some of these other weird ones. Like,
yeah.
And Steve King...
he's around forever.
Is he the one that looks like Jose Luis Rivera?
No, that's Victor Rivera.
Well, he also kind of looks like him, too, because he's
he
got...
does, you're right,
yeah,
he does.
He kind of has that same puffy jacket all the time on.
He's just useless.
And he just... I don't know. It's just a jobber that just sucks. And you know how we had an episode about jobbers. Some jobbers are fun. This guy isn't.
Steve King sucks.
No, he's bad.
So Valentine looks like Greg Valentine, but younger.
Much younger.
He looks like a redneck's mom. Like, he just looks like some lady.
He looks like something, all right.
And as the commentary's going on, Bruno fucking is so horrible. He sounds like Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah.
He's just like...
very vicious guy, but he stays on his opponent. He just doesn't give him a chance to recuperate.
The ring.
Yeah.
It looks like... like, it's all floppy. It looks like it's in, like, somebody's garage or something.
It's awful. It's like a foot and a half off the ground.
Yeah.
It's like a tarp on it.
Like, what I meant floppy, though, is the ropes are literally, like, rubber bands.
The ropes are, like, elastic.
Yeah.
They're awful.
It's terrible.
So, anyway, Valentine wins with an elbow smash.
Yes,
right,
I guess because he's the hammer, but he's not yet, so it's weird. But, yeah, he literally... if I recall, doesn't he do, like, a suplex that looks like it should be the end?
Yes.
But then instead of finishing him off, he elbow smashes him,
and then he pins
him.
It's like the most... it's like if you're playing, like, Super WrestleMania for SNES and
opponent's... and you hit the B button.
Energy meter is down, and you just hit B.
Yeah.
That's how Valentine wins in 2 minutes and 50 seconds.
Now, I want to just say, none of these matches are long.
No. These are squash matches. It's the same thing that would happen throughout the 80s into the 90s.
Yeah.
Just squash matches.
Yep.
So then we get a promo from Ivan Koloff, and Quinn really likes him for some reason. You want to explain?
I just like the fact that at this time he can say he was the world champion in a time when there weren't
Bruno.
A lot of world champions because, you know, the title never changed
hands. Like
Bruno was champion for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Like, since the beginning of time, like, Father Time met him.
Yeah, and like, he was like, here's the title.
Yeah.
And then Ivan Koloff beat him after, like, 8 fucking years as champion.
Yeah. And so Ivan Koloff, he's very in and out of the territory, because it is a territory.
Because this is still NWA, technically.
And he cuts a promo, and he's even talking about, I come here, the promoters, and he's mentioning, like breaking the fourth wall a lot, which is weird.
Yeah, it is weird for that time.
He's talking about how I come, and the promoters, you know, they want me, and I want to beat up guys so that the promoters always have me in line for the title or something.
It was interesting. And I also have here, Lou Albano was very tan.
Yeah, he's...
He looked weird.
He's uncharacteristically very tan. I know he's not, like, He's not, like, white.
No, because he's Italian.
But he's uncharacteristically, like, super tan.
So then we have a recap, and they show basically the whole match of...
It's the worst recap in the world because there's no clipping.
It's just a match.
It's basically a match.
From somewhere else where it's, like, darker.
Yeah, and it's to build the Maivia
right.
Backlund feud.
So it's Peter Maivia turning on Backlund in a tag match against Quinn's second least favorite jobber, Victor Rivera.
Ugh. Yeah, just more.
And Spiros Arion, who is a name from the, you know, from the 70s, basically.
Yeah, he's just a typical guy.
Ugly, doofy-looking guy.
Now, this turn is very weird.
No, and I really had nothing to say of this match other than Backlund is a giant dweeb.
Yeah, and Skull, I had to say, why was Arnie Skullin so lazy? He brings a chair. He's managing, right? And he brings a chair to the ring, and he sits on it. He doesn't even stand there.
It's like somebody's, like, uncle... You know, just sitting there watching. Now, mind you, Blassie's also ringside for the heel team. He's not sitting in no chair.
No.
He's up.
Yeah, Blassie looks like Father Time, and he looks like he's the Father Time that handed Bruno the belt. He looks older, and he's standing up, no problem.
He's getting shit done.
But Arnie over there, he's sitting down. Now, the turn is very weird.
The turn is really, really weird. So Maivia hot tags in... And then he tags right out all assily.
The first time.
The first time, yes. By the way, Quinn made a good observation at this point. I don't think there's tag ropes.
Oh, yeah. People are just strolling along. They don't care.
So then there's another hot tag, right, Quinn?
Yeah.
And he does it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really... It's very subtle, though. Like, Vince isn't screaming over it.
Not at first. And then it's kind of like the third time...
He goes for the third hot tag.
Yeah, and Maivia walks away.
He just walks away.
And Arnold Skolin's really pissed about this.
So we're sitting there watching this, and Quinn's like, what, does he beat up Arnie? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Arnie never got involved. What happens, Quinn?
He beats him up.
He gets his ass kicked by Peter Maivia.
He beats the crap out of him. And then, on top of all this, then they start beating up Bob Backlund, right?
Yes. And then a bunch of, like, pasty, chunky, like, faces make the save.
But... Before that, also, it turns out that Maivia was in cahoots with Blassie and Spiros and
Victor Rivera,
and they're beating the shit out of Bob Backlund.
Right. And somehow this match ends in a double DQ. That doesn't really matter. Then we get what Quinn described as like a proto-Mr. Backlund promo.
Oh, right. This was weird. And he just yells into the rope. He yells into the camera. He's like, why? Why did this happen?
How did this happen?
How did this happen?
Why did that happen? Am I dreaming? The whole world gets me.
Yeah.
And that's all he's saying. He just keeps asking the same question over and over
he's
and over again.
He's seriously like proto Mr. Backlund.
It's really bizarre.
He sounds like him in everything.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, someone in the crowd yells out, suck a dick. Which I thought was really funny. So then we go to, I'm going to let Quinn do this one. We go to a commercial. And what is this commercial, Quinn?
Oh, this commercial. I'm going to put this on the site because it's great. It is superstar Billy Graham shilling, basically, a painting of himself. Now, not just a normal painting, right? It's a painting, like a cartoony, it almost looks like a Transformers kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a painting, it says superstar on it in like Star Wars letters, right? But the superstar Billy Graham is on top of the superstar's letter, and behind him... is space with like
planets
with planets like, and like there's UFOs
daddy, and there's Saturn and there's Uranus.
Yeah, he's describing everything.
And there's the moon daddy and the universe daddy.
Now the best part out of all this. Now Billy Graham is not the only living being on top of the letters. Let's put it that way.
Well put.
There is a saber-toothed tiger which he describes. Next to him, drawn next to him on this poster.
There's a saber-toothed tiger with me, daddy!
Yeah. And he is so happy about this. And here's the kicker at the very end.
Yeah.
Is that it tells you to write in, to get the poster, write in and send money into to Superstar. And not together, two separate words, Superstar.
This is what Quinn tweeted a few days ago.
And a P.O. box for Phoenix, Arizona, not Connecticut.
And I said to Quinn after we watched this, I was like, why is it from Phoenix? And Quinn's like, He probably sold it himself, and Quinn looked into this.
I looked into it, and this turns out that it was a painting he commissioned
himself.
There's an interview with him about it.
He bought the ad time himself.
He bought the ad time himself, and you are pretty much mailing a P.O. box in his town or something.
Yes.
Like, we looked it up. He lived in Phoenix, Arizona. Yes. That's where he's from.
This isn't the WWF selling this. He bought the airtime.
He commissioned the painting, he bought the airtime, and he's selling the painting himself.
And this painting has to be seen to be believed.
It's unbelievable. It is ridiculous, and I'm going to have to post this on the website.
Has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah.
Superstar Billy Graham was way ahead of his time, and we have a very good friend named Donnie that if he knew about this guy, and now he does,
because he's
listening
tigers,
to this.
Too. I mean, a saber-tooth
tiger. He would love this guy. Yeah. This would be his favorite wrestler.
Definitely, without question.
So we move on to our next squash match. This one is awesome.
Yeah, because it's fun Ivan Putski.
It's Ivan Putski, the good version, right, Quinn?
Oh my god, the best version. The one that's like basically a drunk Polish man that beats the shit out of people in 2 seconds.
And he has a beard.
He has a beard, and he has short hair.
He's not all greasy.
He's not greasy, yeah.
And who is he fighting?
I love the name of this guy. The Great Sabu.
Yes!
Completely unrelated to Sabu or the Sheik or any of that.
No, it's just literally some bald guy that looks like the coach.
From Bombay, India! Our favorite ring announcer.
The Great Sabu!
Why is he so great? He gets his ass kicked, basically.
Yep, Putski wins with the Polish hammer in 2 minutes, 28 seconds. Then there's this promo about how the WWF is returning to West Orange, New Jersey. And what does Putski do?
Polish Power remarks about how he loves West Orange, New Jersey.
You know, I've been getting letters saying, when are you coming to West Orange? We've missed you. Well, I tell you what, I missed you too.
And that he could go to the Garden that night, but instead he chose to see his Polish army in West Orange, New Jersey. He really just hyped the shit out of West Orange, New Jersey. Like, he was like, he basically acted like this was the best place ever to wrestle.
We live about 45 minutes away from there. I've never been to West Orange.
No, I haven't either.
I've been to East
Orange.
Isn't
it kind of like shitty, actually?
No, East Orange is shittier.
Okay.
West Orange is fine.
All I know is Polish Power was way too excited to be coming to West Orange, New Jersey.
Right. So we go to our next squash match, which is SD Jones somehow looking older than he does in the 80s.
Yep.
I don't know how. And some jerk named Frankie Williams.
Who cares?
Versus the returning Valiants with Lou Albano.
I would say this was the match of the night.
It was this match. Quinn and I both remarked on this. This was ahead of its time. The Valiants wrestled and moved and had this charisma at a fast pace. It was like you were watching something 10 years ahead of its time,
right.
Seriously.
Right, from the late 80s.
Yeah.
And what I like about this match, that's unique about this match, this isn't the Valiant Brothers where they look the same kind.
Right, from the earlier 70s.
Where both of them have their separate gimmicks that they would later have.
Yeah, one of them sucks, which is Karate Johnny V.
Yeah, Johnny V, but it's still kind of the Johnny V that we know from the mid-80s, the manager kind.
Yeah, he just looks like somebody's grandmother with the hair and the chubbiness.
And Jimmy, handsome Jimmy,
he's like Boogie Woogie.
He looks like the Boogie Woogie, like from the NWA, the good one that people liked. And he's all fun and stuff. Yeah. Like, he's just good.
And honestly, no one likes Johnny V.
No one likes Johnny. They do one cool thing at the beginning of this match, that they, if you recall, they take like a million years to like take their stuff off, and they get like the heat in this like dinky place they're at. It's like crazy. Like, people are going nuts for this.
Yeah.
They want to like kill them.
In the middle of the match, there's a voiced over promo by Vince for, if you thought Brooklyn was hip now, no, the WWF was there back in the 70s. In fact, they had a show at the Notre Dame Hall, wherever that is.
If you know anything about New York, the 70s...
not a high point.
Especially Brooklyn. That's a pretty rough place to be running a wrestling show in the 70s.
The hipsters didn't migrate there until about 2011.
It was more like a burned out, looked like a nuclear bomb went off.
Very working class. Yeah. Very, hey, what do you want from me, guy? Yeah. The pizza and the bagel, huh?
Yeah, I'm surprised that they were running a show there in 1978.
I can do that stereotype because I'm Italian, okay?
Okay. Forget about it.
A quote from Quinn. Johnny V looks like dog shit, no joke.
Did I say that?
Yes. And I observed that Bruno is useless on commentary and would continue to be useless on commentary for the next 10 years.
He's awful.
He didn't stop doing commentary until 88.
I feel like he doesn't contribute shit this whole show.
He could not be there and you wouldn't notice.
No.
Vince that guy's good, Vince.
He's always talking about conditioning and like he only cares about like how the athletes are preparing and training. Like he never is really paying attention to the match.
Right.
Like,
no, I know.
He's awful.
The ref looked like Ronald Reagan.
The actor?
That's a weird observation.
He just did, but it's true. Again, folks, this is the December 16th, 1978 Worldwide Championship Wrestling.
Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
Worldwide Federation.
Worldwide. It is a mouthful, to be honest.
WWWF Championship Wrestling. You can find it on YouTube. I won't tell you where, because I like this channel, and I don't want it to get taken down.
Just look up that date. You'll find it.
You'll find it. Anyway, so there's the Valiants win in 3 minutes. Oh, it's long.
Yeah.
3 minutes and 30 seconds.
But, again, match of the night.
Match of the night. Blassie and Maivia have another promo, and Blassie calls back on an idiot, which is just funny.
It's like a less detailed promo. Why do they have two promos for the... I guess they're just shilling the shit out of that match. Yeah, because it's probably coming up.
Yep, and then we get Quinn's favorite, Ivan Koloff, against
Ivan Koloff,
a jobber named Tony Russo, who looks like Dino Bravo doing a Don Morocco impression.
Didn't I think it was Dino Bravo?
Yes.
Wow, yeah, just weird. But Ivan Koloff does look good, would you say?
He looks okay. I mean, I thought you said, like, look how fast he is, but I don't know what...
And he was pretty fast. I thought that match was not bad. It was fine. It was supposed to make Ivan Koloff look good again, right?
Yeah, so Koloff pins Tony Russo beats Tony Russo in a minute 17 with the Boston Crab.
It should be a Russian Crab.
It should be a Russian Crab. Yeah. Anyway, so we move on to... our next match, I guess, if you want to call it not the main event. What were they called back then?
The featured contest. Yeah,
and it's the tag champions. God, Larry Zbysko and Tony Gurria, who is like eternally the tag champion, and
he's the tag champ every day ever.
Yeah, and he's always 55 years old.
Yeah, and he's got the worst hair I've ever seen in my life.
Worse than Bruno's fro.
He has like consistently bad hair though. This isn't like a new thing in 78. No, he always has like a pompadour that looks like an idiot.
Yeah,
so he has a rug on his head.
And they're fighting the unpredictable Johnny Rods and Silvano Souza. This is, by the way, a non-title match. I have to say, I like the heel team better.
I do much. I was rooting for Johnny Rods the whole match.
And Quinn just bursts out in the middle of this about Larry Zbysko.
Yeah, I said, how is he a Hall of Famer?
And you keep calling him Nabisco.
Nabisco, I hate him.
And then...
Like, you know how I was saying Johnny Rods? I burst out in the middle again. I remember this. I said, I hope Johnny Rods beats the shit out of Larry Zbysko.
Quinn was just like up to a 10 with his Larry Zbysko hate.
I couldn't stand this guy.
So then Quinn says to me, well, you've got three Hall of Famers here other than Pete Schmutz.
Or whatever I call his him name Pete is. Schmutz.
Silvano Souza.
Silvano Souza is Pete Schmutz eternally forever. He looks... Did he not remind you of that dude? Oh, man, I don't remember. But didn't he kind of remind me of Gas House...
Whatever. Gilbert?
Gas House Gilbert.
He was so much worse than Gas House Gilbert.
He was
Gilbert.
A shitty version of Gas House, but...
So Quinn goes on a roll here. I'm going to read you some of the things that he said. First of all, he says, Larry Zbysko blows, by the way. Why is he having problems?
Yeah, he was, like, struggling.
I know.
It's one thing I hate about jobber matches, is I hate when, like, superstars or champions like these guys are supposed to be. Why are they having a problem with Johnny Rods or Pete Schmutz? Like, seriously.
Right, because Rods and Schmutz dominate the match.
Yeah.
Quinn again goes off about Tony Gurria having the worst haircut in the history of wrestling.
So bad.
And then someone throws garbage in the ring. And speaking of garbage, Larry Zbysko tags in, pins Pete Schmutz with a vertical suplex. It's the 70s, folks.
Suplexes are pretty deadly back then.
And if you and I noted, the fastest three count ever.
Well, okay, if you recall, we didn't mention this, but at the very beginning of this match, they say, or until curfew or something.
Yes.
They must have been running out of time, because the ref counts, like, it's even faster than, like, it's faster than that time Jericho fake won the title or whatever. It's faster than any count
it's
I've ever seen
very
in my life.
Very fast three count.
But it's like, everyone's like, yeah, that's legit, whatever.
Yeah, let's go
home.
Because,
like, it worked with the faces, so.
Yeah, exactly. So they were... So they were like, yeah, it's fine. And it looked fine to me. And that's WWF Championship Wrestling from December 16th, 1978. We reviewed something.
Yeah, you can put it in the books.
Put it in the books.
This might be the only review ever in any place of that episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Of
and that's
wrestling.
What we aim for, folks. We aim to be different.
What did you think of that before we go this week?
Despite all the jokes, because we're not going to sit here doing match play-by-play.
Yeah. Play, just an
I
overall
thought it was
feeling.
An entertaining, fun little show.
I liked it, too.
Honestly,
I was surprised.
I was really surprised. I was especially entertained by the Valiants and by Ivan Koloff.
Yeah.
And by Fred Blassie. I like Fred Blassie
a
lot. Yeah,
and the promos were decent.
They were fun. And it was just a nice little snapshot of a very
forgotten era. Yeah.
Pre-Hulkamania, post-Bruno, really.
Yeah.
Bruno wasn't the champion anymore.
The feuds aren't notable, but they're, you know, they're there.
And we learned some stuff.
Yeah,
there's
we learned
a lot of stuff
yeah.
I didn't know that was going on. So, folks, stay tuned for more of that. We are going to be reviewing something every week, and it's going to be something that we've never seen before.
Yeah, that's what we aim to do. We want to be surprised by this,
yeah,
right?
We're not watching we're not going to review Uncensored 97
no.
or any of that crap or Raw from 98.
Yeah.
Leave that to people.
Not that all of it's crap.
No. I'm just saying, not that there's anything wrong with that. But I've seen all that stuff.
Right. We aim to be unique here.
I want to find the next Pete Schmutz.
Yeah.
And speaking of Pete Schmutz, Quinn, this has been a great episode.
Been
season
fun.
Two, episode yeah. number 11, this Monday, December 19th, 2016. Christmas is going to be next Sunday, Quinn.
Yeah. I hope I get a Pete Schmutz action figure for Christmas.
Folks, as always, be sure to check us out on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Blueberry. Hey, we're on player.fm, by the way.
Yeah, we didn't sign up for it, but we're on it.
Maybe in 2017 we'll have a MySpace. I don't know.
Eventually.
We'll have to see.
And don't forget the website.
Don't forget the website.
website.
That's what you use to use the internet. Yeah. OVPpodcast.com. We will see you next week.
Yeah, we'll
right?
be back.
Lord Alpha, we're good with that?
Yeah.
Okay, we're good. And after that, it'll be 2017, which will be very interesting. We'll see what...
Big Show's not dancing in a baby
yeah,
diaper.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. Until next time, folks, enjoy your retro wrestling. Let us know if there's anything you want us to talk about, review, anything like that. We'll be happy to talk to you. We mean that.
Yeah, we're here for you.
We're here for you. So have a good rest of your day, enjoy your week, and enjoy your time off. So long.
This is Superstar Billy Graham coming at you, and I got something heavy to lay down. The new Superstar Space Poster is finally here. Now I want the cameraman to zoom in close and let all my fans see how the superstar looks in outer space. There's flying saucers, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, stellar gas, gamma rays, and all your favorite stars. And look at my new tag team partner, a Stone Age saber-tooth tiger. Now you know you can never pin the superstar in the ring, but now you can pin me to your wall and think what a Christmas present this space poster would be, all wrapped up underneath your Christmas tree. Now get a pencil and a piece of paper, because here's a television announcer to tell you how to get it.
Just send $5.95 plus $1 for postage and handling to Superstar, Post Office Box 5238, Phoenix, Arizona, 85010. That's Superstar, Post Office Box 5238, Phoenix.
Will you stop?